Welcome to Fine Tuning with Drew Taylor, your one-stop shop when it comes to animation news and commentary. Drew and I are recording this week's show on Saturday, January 21st, 2023, and 90 years ago today, Drew, the Mickey Mouse short, The Mad Doctor, was released. And now you know this one, right?
Of course. This is one, I feel like, one of the more iconic Mickey Mouse shorts.
You're not wrong. I mean, for example, it's directed by David Hand, who went on to become the supervising director for Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And it's got some amazing animation in it, some wonderful design. But at the same time, it's one of the only Mickey Mouse shorts that ever fell into the public domain. And you know the story here, right?
No, please tell us.
This came out in 1933, and this was Disney spoofing Universal's run of hugely popular horror films. I mean, for example, Dracula came out in February 14th, 1931. And by the way, the 14th, come on, honey, it's Valentine's Day. Let's go to the theater and see a bloodsucker. Then Frankenstein gets released to theaters in November of that same year, and it's just how different Hollywood was back then. I mean, Dracula gets released to theaters late winter of 1931. That Todd Browning film is a big enough hit that Carl Lemelig, you know, then head of Universal, says, get me another one of those. Frankenstein doesn't go before the camera till late August of 1931. They finish production October 3rd of that same year, and it's out in theater in 7 weeks. That's a television schedule, right?
That's amazing.
Frankenstein makes even more money than Dracula. Lamely says, well, get me another one of those. And so Mummy arrives in theaters December of the following year, 1932. And just a month or so after that, we get The Mad Doctor. But here's the thing. Disney seems to have done too good a job of aping Universal's horror movies. The Mad Doctor, there are theaters around the country who just flat out refuse to show it because they believe this Disney short is just too scary for kids. And as a direct result, for many years, The Mad Doctor was banned entirely in the United Kingdom and in Nazi Germany. Because this Mickey Mouse short can't get the sort of wide release that typically the other shorts do, it gets thrown into the back of the vault, and eventually the company loses track of it, which is why The Mad Doctor becomes that rarer-than-rare item, a Disney-produced short that somehow slips into the public domain. But on the other hand, you know Warren Spector, right? The guy who did Epic Mickey and the sequel, what, The Power of Two?
Of course.
Warren is a true Disney history buff. And so when he was looking for a villain for his action-adventure platform game, he reached all the way back to 1933 and made the Mad Doctor the central character of Epic Mickey. And the animation on this thing is spectacular. But again, if you want to see it, I think you have to go to YouTube. Did it ever show up in any of the actual collections the studio put out? Or
I don't know. I'm gonna look on Disney Plus right now as you talk, Jim, to see.
Okay. We have lots more animation news to come, folks. But as always, the news portion of today's Fine Tuning is brought to you by Storybook Destinations, trusted travel partner of the Jim Hill Media Podcast Network. For a worry-free travel experience every time, please book online at storybookdestinations.com. Okay, so folks, if you've listened to previous Fine Tunings, you know we're in the middle of award season. Tuesday, January 24th is when the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences will officially be announcing which films have been nominated for Oscars this year. Is it the Critics Circle? Is that what you're officially a member of now? What's the
Critics Choice Association is what it's called, I believe. It used to be Broadcast Film Critics, and now it's Critics Choice.
Got it. Okay. So Drew has been keeping tabs on this for months because award season out in L.A. these days begins November, right? Sometimes earlier?
Yeah, it's like right after Thanksgiving. That's mm-hmm. when the screeners start coming in and, you know.
Okay, so you've been talking pretty consistently about what you think the lineup will be. Actually went back through our old show notes to see the films you've been talking about. You were talking about Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, and Turning Red, and then if the category goes out to five, I think you've also talked about the Sea Beast, you talked about Wendell and Wilde. And the Annies just got announced earlier this week. So
I want to go. How do I go, Jim? That's my question.
Isn't that at the Alex Theater? I can reach out on your behalf if you want.
Yeah, let me know. I want to work the room, yeah.
Okay, no. Happy to do it. But it's like the Annies are listening to Drew, because when they settled on what the best animated features for this year would be, the Annies nominee committee selected, once again, Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. We have Chris Williams' The Sea Beast. We had Wendell and Wilde. And then we had Turning Red and DreamWorks Animation, Puss in Boots, The Last Wish. I mean, if you look at those first three, that just says this was a big, big year for Netflix.
There has been historical controversy around DreamWorks and the Annies, though. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's keying off of the number of folks at DreamWorks who belong to the union, right?
Well, yeah, it was the fact that I think Katzenberg was the one, right, who said that every single employee at DreamWorks would be a member of this union, right, or academy or whatever.
Yep.
So that historically things were tipped more in the scales of DreamWorks. Now, I don't know if that's true anymore. This is just a funny anecdote from many years ago, and I think Puss in Boots is more than deserving of all the nominations. But anyway, I just thought this was a funny thing to...
No, you're not wrong. Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio still looks like the film to beat, but I'm fascinated that you're bringing up Puss in Boots, because I think they've been running a really smart campaign in regard to how they've been keeping Puss in Boots sort of front of mind. Have you seen some of the stuff they've been doing on social media where, for example, they take the two big battles from Last Wish between Puss and the wolf character, and without giving away the what's really going on with the wolf character, the wonderful bookends, the story structure that they did there?
It seems like they're letting the animators kind of show off their work on social media, too, in a way that I haven't really seen before in a DreamWorks production. I don't know if you've seen all the stuff about the anxiety attack.
Yes, I was. That was the very next thing I was going to bring up. And I thought to sort of lay down the rough piece of animation to show the finished work, and also to show what a great job they did there of actually replicating a panic attack in animation. I mean, I think they've made some really, really smart choices. I don't know if it's going to be enough to necessarily slip ahead of Pinocchio in the final leg, but a lot of people are getting a much bigger appreciation for the work and the artistry in The Last Wish because of the very thing you're talking about, letting the animators sort of, let's talk about this scene, or let's take a look at how these two scenes line up.
Have you watched it yet, Jim?
I have.
Let's hear your thoughts.
We have talked previously about how clearly this project was influenced by what was done with Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. But it really is kind of its own animal. DreamWorks has done a lot of work in the Shrek world with fairy tale characters and reimagining them and, you know, that sort of thing. But what they've managed to do with Puss in Boots is a higher level between the stylization, and they do lean into a darker storyline that I think turns into a much, much richer film. I mean, no disrespect to Pinocchio, which also, let's be honest, goes to some pretty dark places as well. I guess that's what's also kind of interesting about this year is the two films that are looking to line up to be the ones, you know, to consider for the best animated feature go in some surprisingly adult directions, especially given, you know, the way Guillermo's been out there talking about how animation isn't a genre. It's a way you tell stories with film. And I'm really pulling for one of these two to take home the award. Though that said, we haven't really talked about Stranger World yet, have we?
Well, did you watch it?
I did. I love the look of it. I love the intent. It's one of those movies where you're watching it and you're literally, okay, that character, for example, the mom. who's the amazing flyer, and that character is going to be somebody's favorite. That character is going to change somebody's life. Likewise, the Hispanic member of the party, the explorers of the early in the film, who then becomes the president of the country. There's a lot of really, you know, it's like, that's going to be important to somebody. But it was a little on the nose. Sometimes it's like, I am an important character. I am significant. Pay attention to me. And it just, I think it was a little too earnest, a little too well-meaning. And weren't you pointing out that you bought 20th Century Fox, you have their film library. If you wanted to remake Fantastic Voyage, remake Fantastic Voyage.
Yeah, I think that it being kind of a twist does it a little bit of a disservice, because I feel like that the end is pretty confusing just in terms of like what's going on and what they're doing. Are they helping the animal? Are they, you know, I don't know. It was a little confusing.
You were the one who pointed out how long this Don Hall film has been in development. The proof you were pointing out is The Art of Disney's Strange World, the book. And how many pieces of art that are in that book that show, you know, the early looks and what they were trying were done by people who haven't worked at Disney for, what, 5 years, 6 years?
Yeah. It's a little eye-opening.
Okay.
One day we'll get the full story, but
okay.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. In fact, there's a part of me that, you know, we were sitting at home, you know, watching it on our brand new flat screen, and it looked lovely. But there was also a part of me that felt like, oh, geez, I wish I'd seen this in a theater with these amazing vistas and that sort of thing on a bigger screen. Maybe the story would have had more impact. But I think it's kind of telling to circle back to the Annies that Strange World didn't make the cut for, you know, in fact, somebody was pointing out that Strange World and Pixar's Lightyear only picked up 2 nominations each with this year's Annie out of 37 categories. And that particularly, I think, stings for Lightyear, which I really, really enjoyed as a film. But anyway, to circle back to DreamWorks, DreamWorks is having a huge year. If we pivot to the parks for a sec, the Kids Zone at Universal Florida just closed down this past weekend to be redone. DreamWorks Land, that's one of the least well-kept secrets in themed entertainment these days. Likewise, the park that Universal Creative just announced for Frisco, Texas, the one that's supposed to be for families with small children. If you look at the concept art for that, the logo is so clearly the DreamWorks logo that's kind of been futzed with just to give them some possible deniability. I mean, DreamWorks is going to get its own park. And Illuminations has not been forgotten. I don't know if you're paying attention to the VillainCon Minion Blast ride that's being built at Universal Florida as a replacement for Shrek 4D. Kind of intriguing mix of elements on this ride-through shooter. The setting is from the Minions movie from 2015, VillainCon, which was in the movie held in Orlando, Florida. However, the poster that was just hung on the outside of the building just a day or so ago suggests that the villains for this attraction are going to be the Vicious Six, which are from last year's Minions The Rise of Gru. But anyway, VillainCon Minions Blast is supposed to open summer of 2023. The new DreamWorks area in the old Kid Zone, I'm hearing, is 2024. Also worth noting that Comedy Central has just revealed that Wednesday, February 8th, will be the launch date for the season 26 of South Park. And Casa Bonita, which a lot of us mostly know from a very famous episode of South Park, but the actual physical Casa Bonita shut down in 2011. Trey Parker and Matt Stone stepped in and decided, given that it had become so much of South Park's lore, they couldn't let it go away. So they're spending entirely too much time and entirely too much money, you know, bringing this thing back. And we now have a May 2023. In fact, didn't they just post like a video online where, you know, they revealed the opening date with the workmen surrounding them?
Yep. I would do the same thing for Don Kukos. I'm just going to say that right now. Should Don Kukos ever become in jeopardy, I will save it.
I'm so happy to hear that. By the way, the physical location of Casa Bonita is in the Lamar Station Plaza on that's Colfax Avenue in Lakewood, Colorado. And I do really want to see Casa Bonita at some point. Okay, wrapping up the news portion here, folks. We were just talking about Netflix. They have just announced a new animated feature. This one coming from Adam Sandler. Leo, have you seen anything about that, Drew?
I just saw what everybody else saw in the little sort of sizzle for Netflix's 2023 lineup, mm-hmm. which looks incredibly anemic. But Leo does look cute. I will say that.
All right. Well, what I noticed is this new animated feature from Happy Madison. It's going to debut on that streaming service on November 22nd, 2023, the exact same day that Disney's Wish arrives in theaters, about a 74-year-old lizard named Leo, who's been living in the same Florida classroom for decades, who finds out that, according to a longevity chart, he only has one more year to live, and so he's now determined to escape his terrarium. I was kind of intrigued by who's working on this with Sandler. I mean, for example, Robert Schmiegel, who is the co-writer of Hotel Transylvania and Hotel Transylvania 2, and David Wackenheim and Robert Marinetti, who were the heads of story on Hotel Transylvania. But no Gennady, right?
No. Well, they famously, Robert Schmiegel and Gendy famously did not get along super well.
Okay.
Which is why none of these people were on the third movie, which I think is the most Gendy-ish movie of the three. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's a reason for that.
Okay. It's going to be interesting to see who comes out on top animation-wise November of this year, whether it's Adam Sandler's 74-year-old lizard or the fainting goat in Disney's Wish that's being voiced by Alan Tudyk. Maybe some lo-fi music will help calm that character down. And speaking of which, on the second half of today's show, we're going to take a look at Disney stepping into the chill music space. We were just talking about Netflix, and they do have two additional animated features coming up on that subscription streaming service. We have The Magician's Elephant that becomes available to subscribers on March 17th. And then we have We Lost Our Human, which debuts on March 21st.
Now, that one's interesting because that was also one of those ones like My Dad the Bounty Hunter, where it was like, is this a movie? Is it a show? What is it? Because this was a project that was greenlit back with like Kid Cosmic and City of Ghosts, that kind of initial wave of Netflix original animation. Mm-hmm. So it's been around a long time, and I guess the final form of it is a movie, maybe? I don't know, but that'll be one to watch, and I'm sure we'll talk about it closer to release.
Okay. It would have been nice to see that one get the love and attention that City of Ghosts did.
Well, depending on who you talk to. If you talk to the creator, it didn't get any love whatsoever. So depending on which perspective we see these things on, Jim, I guess. If you're too close to it, could get a little dicier, but yeah.
Okay. Now, also worth noting here that we don't have release dates for three of Netflix's high-profile projects. We have the Chicken Run sequel, A Dawn of the Nugget. We also have Monkey King and Nimona, which Drew and I just talked about a show or two ago. In fact, I have been reaching out, trying to get folks from Blue Sky, the very folks you were talking about, who continue to work at home. But again, they did all of this amazing animation on Nimona from home. What are you hearing from the reaction about the Disney memo that Iger put out about folks needing to return to the mothership, so to speak, you know, 4 days a week starting in, I want to say, April?
Yeah, I don't think anybody's really happy about it. I think it's somebody coming into an office and seeing a bunch of empty desks and wondering why they're paying so much for rent. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, what's really sad is that a lot of people who relocated during the pandemic are just leaving the company. And part of me wonders if this is not a pre-layoff layoff. where it's like, let's see how many people we can just get to quit on their own accord before we go in and start cutting teams down. That is my feeling about it.
That is a wonderful insight and kind of a horrible thing to hear. But yes, when you look at just the layoffs that continue in the tech sector, I mean, it seems to be folks still believing that, okay, there is a recession headed our way. In fact, I was reading something just yesterday about the way the trends are going. It looks like whatever happens is going to be the second half of 2023. And so a lot of companies are still trying to position for that. And that's sad to think. But again, it makes perfect sense, that it's a layoff that doesn't leave any fingerprints. You decided not to come back to work. I didn't tell you not to come back to work. Well, okay, this makes me feel bad, so maybe I should put on some lo-fi chill-out music. What do you know about this, Drew?
I don't know anything about this. This is the first I'm hearing about it, Jim, and so I'm very interested to hear how this came about.
Same thing here. I literally got a press release from Disney earlier this week, and it included a link to a brand new album called Lo-Fi Mini Chill. And the gimmick of it was 16 songs from the Disney catalog, but done in the style of chill or chill out music, which is they take songs that go with a slow tempo, relaxed mood. I'm old enough to remember this is easy listening, like Mantovani. But for today's generation, it's typically done without vocals, but it's also got a steady beat, but it's done in such a style that they deliberately build in imperfections, so it's not so smooth. The idea is you put on this music, it's in the background, and it allows you, because of its consistent beat and because of its style, to focus. In fact, the very first of these albums that Disney did, Lo-Fi Mini Focus, came out in January of last year and evidently did well enough that we've got the sequel album, Lo-Fi Chill, which is coming out tail end of this month. It's not a very surprising group of songs. I mean, it's Disney running through its hit catalog, so you have things like Circle of Life from Lion King, Colors of the Wind from Pocahontas. But at the same time, they want to stay on top of the new Disney catalog. So you have We Don't Talk About Bruno from Encanto, How Far I'll Go from Moana. But is it really good music if you suddenly look up and like, okay, three songs have gone by and I can't really name any of them that went by?
That just shows you how well it's working, Jim. You are focused. You are in the mood. You are getting your homework done. Yes.
Well, that's the other thing. There are these interesting pieces of animation that Disney has created to go alongside of it. And it's Minnie sitting at her kitchen table with a cup of coffee working on her laptop. And I want to say for the earlier album, for Focus, it was Minnie in her office working with a stylus, also on her computer. I guess Drew basically hit it on the nail there. That if I looked up, was doing research for today's show, and looked up and three or four songs had gone by, and it's like, well, I'll be damned if I could tell you what the songs were, but I did get some work done. So, all right, well, there you go. Maybe it is very effective. But anyway, okay, so if you want to try these folks, there's a fairly strong representation of them over at YouTube. So it's Lo-Fi Mini Focus and Lo-Fi Mini Chill.
And then it is on Spotify right now, Jim. See that right there?
There we go. Okay.
There it is.
Given how agitated some Disney fans are right now, maybe they could definitely use a little Lo-Fi Mini Chill. There's a certain amount of agitation that's deserved here. And what I'm talking about, folks, is the Disney 100 banners that just went up at Disneyland Park. I guess these are on the tramway leading to the park. A series of banners sort of touching on significant dates and significant events in Disney company history over the past 100 years. And the problem is that whoever was in charge of this project got a number of the dates wrong. And when you say, a significant event in the company is the Matterhorn, which opened in the park in 1955, it's like, well, no, that actually opened in 1949. Or for that matter, if you're talking about Snow White and the Seven Dwarves and how, yes, significant event in the company, and that opened in theaters in 39. It's like, well, no, it actually, you know, it premiered in 37 and then it went wide in February of 38.
I think there was another one about the cruise line that said it was 95 when it was 98. That was another mistake.
Disney actually has an archive. And there's 11, 12, 15 people who work under Becky Klein there who man the phones. And it would have been so easy to just, these are the events and the dates that we're planning on doing the banners on. Can somebody in the archive staff confirm these for us? Because that used to happen. In fact, I began going into the Disney archive in the mid-80s. And this was when it was in the Royo Disney building on the lot. And if you were looking for something for reference, you had to go, like you were in a library. They had a 3-card catalog with little index cards, and you'd flip through and go, all right, can you pull me the Mineral King file? And somebody would go into the back room and pull the Mineral King file. But while I was in there working at the main table, I mean, you could literally, Dave Smith's office, the head archivist of the company, it was there, the door was open, and you could hear what Dave was up to all day. And, you know, I remember very clearly at one point, Dave got a phone call from somebody at the studio, and I said, hang on. He walked out of his office. He went to this giant wall of books in front of me. He pulled down a golden book, I want to say, that was published in the late 40s, early 50s, and flipped it open and looked and then picked up the phone again and said, okay, the proper spelling of J. Thaddeus Toad's name is, well, it has two D's in it. And the person at the other end of the phone thanked Dave and is like, nope, glad to help, and hung up the phone and slid it back in. I mean, that's their job, folks, you know, to double check things. So somebody wanted to make sure that if they were spelling J. Thaddeus's name in something that Disney was doing back in the 80s, they got it right. And the fact that, you know, here are all these banners for, you know, a celebration of Disney's 100th year in show business, and they get something so easy to check wrong, is a little maddening. On the other hand, though, Drew, have you been following what's going on at Warner Brothers Discovery with their 100-year celebration, which kind of in a nice way lined up with the Lunar New Year of the Year of the Rabbit? So is it bugs all over?
No, I just saw the logo with bugs kind of lying down in the zeros, which I liked a lot. But what are they planning?
They caught a break. Yeah, they already decided to do the logo with bugs for the 100th. And then somebody's like, you understand it's the Year of the Rabbit. It's like, oh, no, we did not. But, oh, cool. It's also worth noting that if you go over to the Universal Parks, they, too, are doing their Lunar New Year celebration. But they've got from Minions Rise of Gru, there's that moment in the film where characters become part of the Chinese zodiac, and is at least one minion who becomes a rabbit. And so now he's all over T-shirts and sweaters that they're selling at their park. Whereas if we go to Disney, they have decided for their Lunar New Year celebration at Disney's California Adventure, well, they've not only got, what's his name, Oswald, the lucky rabbit, for the Year of the Rabbit, but I guess last year was the Year of the Tiger. And so in honor of that, for the first time ever, Hortensia, she's made appearances at Tokyo Disneyland, but she's never made it stateside. So she's now part of the Lunar Celebration at California Adventure. In fact, Alice's mom, Michelle, is going down to California Adventure next week because her husband, Noah, is one of the great Oswald collectors on the planet. I mean, at some point, Drew, we're going to have to get the two of you together because Noah's got stuff that goes back all the way to the 20s and the 30s, but he's always looking for new pieces.
Oh, wow.
For his collection. And evidently, they're doing for the Lunar New Year a button that features Oswald and Hortensia, and Michelle is being a good spouse and heading down to the park next week and collecting one for Noah. So be interesting to see what that looks like. who knows? During her drive, perhaps Michelle will be looking for something to listen to in the car that's entertaining. And if that is the case, I'm hoping she listens to Light the Fuse, which is Drew and Charles Hood wonderful podcast about the Mission Impossible films. So what's going on this week with that?
Well, this week we are hopefully, should all the stars align and everything work out, do a Oscar nominations special episode. Mm-hmm. If Maverick does come through with those Oscar nominations, we're going to have Perry Nimeroff, who's an old friend from Collider and just one of the best, talk to us about the nominations and what she thinks. And then, we've got some fun episodes coming up. You know, it's always a gamble, Jim. Who's going to return the call this week?
Yeah, but
Oh,
speaking of which, we do have to talk. I've been chatting with the folks who are doing that Disney animation immersive experience that's coming to Boston next month.
The projection mapping thing? Or the
there we go.
Touring?
From Lighthouse Entertainment. They're the same folks who did the Van Gogh traveling exhibit. But I reached out to them, and they would love to chat. So maybe we'll bring them on the show and sort of talk about how one does that. How, you turn Disney into a projection-based experience. But
oh, that would be amazing.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll get that in the work, folks. And in addition to Light the Fuse, folks, we do have a couple of podcasts here we'd like you to maybe check out. We have, of course, Disney Dish, which I do with Lynn Testa. We also have Marvel Us Disney, which I do with Aaron Adams. And Brian Gunn and I will have to get a new Looking at Lucasfilm out the door in later this week. Tell you what, folks, though, if you could do Drew and I a favor, if you could head over to Apple Podcasts and rate and review, well, not just the podcast you're listening to right now, Fine Tuning, but also Light the Fuse. That would be very, very helpful. Also, if you really, really, really like what you heard here, if you want to head over to Bandcamp and subscribe, social media, Drew. So you're still on Twitter.
Still on Twitter, still on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Yes, Twitter and Instagram at Drew Tailored, like a tailored shirt.
Okay.
And yeah, there for the time being.
Yeah. Same thing here. Still on Twitter, still on Facebook over there as Jim Hill Media News. On the other hand, Twitter and Instagram are Jim Hill Media. And I guess that's going to do it for this week, folks. So thank you for listening, and Drew and I will be back soon.